Hello, everybody. It's Lisa Moore for the Brighton Business Show here on Radio Reverb. And we've hit autumn now with October here. And generally, from October onwards, there are quite a lot of events and organisation and things going on. So in our show this month, we wanted to talk to some people that get involved in running events, whether that's running events for the general public, whether that's running events for organisations, training and all those sorts of things. So Radio Reverb is run in conjunction with the Friday Ad and the Friday Media Group, who love to promote, support and inspire local business. You can download this as a podcast, listen to it again on digital DAB radio, and we are Radio Reverb 97.2 FM. And I'm really excited to introduce you to our first guest, the lovely Jane Paynton, who runs the School of Booze. Now, Jane and I met briefly at the Brighton Metropole Hotel a few weeks ago at a Brighton Chamber event, and we had a really lovely conversation. And I think it's fascinating to hear a little bit more about the School of Booze. So, Jane, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, and thanks for inviting me on to speak about my favourite subject. Me, no, booze. School of Booze, in fact.
Yeah, so when you first told me the name of your business, the School of Booze, all sorts of things were going in my head, thinking, oh, well, what does she teach people how to drink or how not to drink? Or does she work with pubs? And I had no idea, really, but you told me a little bit more. So please share exactly what the School of Booze is all about.
The School of Booze educates people about how drinks are made, so beer, cider, wine, spirits, and how to match with food and where the flavours come from and all sorts of fascinating things about the history of alcoholic drinks, the cultural impact that they've had on society. And it's a celebration of alcoholic drinks. So if you learn this sort of thing, you do actually appreciate what you're drinking more, because you think about it more, you slow down and you appreciate it more. When I did my first accreditation, so my first education through with alcoholic drinks was through the Wine and Spirit Education Trust. And just the fact of swirling what you're drinking and smelling it and thinking about it makes you appreciate it more, but it makes you slow down and think about it. So my drinking experiences are actually much better by having education about them. And that's what I do. I do corporate events. I train hospitality staff. I train members of the public sometimes. Very occasionally I'll do that. But it's all about appreciating alcohol and learning more about it so you appreciate it more.
So it sounds like, yeah, it's a bit like MasterChef for alcohol, I guess. You know, there are so many shows out there at the moment, aren't there, about food, and we're taught to, you know, look at food, smell food, you know, taste food and appreciate it. But alcohol, I guess, maybe I'm generalising here, but in the UK, I think when we become teenagers, you know, alcohol is like, alcohol is there for one reason and one reason only. And it sounds like that's not what you're about at all. It's about appreciating and enjoying and understanding the benefits that it can bring to you and how it can enhance your experience with or without food, I guess.
Yes, definitely. It's funny you should mention teenagers. I mean, teenagers, when we were teenagers, that was definitely the case. But now teenagers don't drink as much or at all because they're busy on the phones and socialising. They socialise in different ways now, teenagers do. But just getting back to your point about alcohol and enhancing food. Alcohol is food, by the way. Every alcoholic drink that we drink starts as a foodstuff. It could be an apple if it's cider, a grape if it's wine, barley if it's beer, barley if it's gin or potatoes or rice. So it all starts as food. And it's really odd that the food shows don't focus more on the alcoholic drink side of things. It's almost as though they're scared to be promoting alcohol. Well, yeah. I promote alcohol, but I promote you know, enjoyment of it and sensible drinking of it. And if you know about alcohol and you drink sensibly, it's a real gift. It's a gift to humans and has been for thousands of years. You know, the original spirits were there as a delivery method for medicinal herbs and spices. Spirits, you know, what now we call gin or was known as Genever in those early days, or brandy, they weren't there to drink recreationally. They were there because they brought the medicinal herbs and spices into the blood system in a way that you wouldn't by dissolving them in water. In fact, they wouldn't have dissolved in water. So it's medicine, just what the doctor ordered.
That's fascinating. Absolutely fascinating.
And, you know, alcoholic drinks, beer, you know, oh, it's the history of alcohol is so fascinating. So, for instance, early beer drinkers, beer is very nutritious. It's one of the most nutritious things we can drink. And it contains alcohol, which is very good for killing nasty bacteria in the gut and keeping our immune systems healthy. So beer being nutritious, early humans who drank beer were getting nutrition in a way that the non-drinkers weren't, because this was soluble nutrition enhanced by fermenting the barley. It's a process called biological ennoblement, by the way. And so they were actually much healthier. Anyway, I seem to have gone off at a tangent now on history of alcohol.
But that's really interesting, because you're just picking up on, you know, talking about health benefits, fermentation is a really big thing at the moment with foods, especially. You know, you just have to go on Facebook nowadays and there's a fermentation workshop. Come along and see how to make kimchi and all these different things. So the fermentation process that we have with alcohol is obviously really important.
Really important. The thing I would suggest to people is just drink good, but drink less. So choose, because we, you know, we want to keep our units to a certain level. We don't want to overdrink. So choose what you're going to drink, and drink something that's really great, and don't waste your units. I don't waste my units because I just want that drink to be the best drink I've ever had at that particular time. Yeah. And that's what I do with my events. You know, when I have events, you know, I'll choose the best that you can get for those people to try and to drink. You know, the corporate events, for instance, it could be a networking that a client's asked me to do. So there'll be a masterclass of cider tasting or beer or wine tasting. And it brings people together, alcohol does, like nothing else. Yeah. It's a link. I describe it as a lingua franca, a universal language. It's something that brings humans together. Now, some people don't drink alcohol at all, but there are non-alcoholic versions of drinks now that still bring people together. It's the ritual of having a libation that is so, so important to humans. It's a social thing. It's a ritual. And we come together and bond that way. So that's what I try and supply with my School of Booze corporate events, that type of atmosphere and that type of respect for alcohol or its non-alcohol version.
When you run these events, what do you do? I mean, obviously there's the drink there for them to taste, but what else is involved in those events?
So, for instance, so we would do a masterclass of how to taste like a professional, and it's really hard to describe how something smells or tastes unless you have the language. So it really helps if somebody else makes some suggestions, me. Yeah. So I'm trained, my nose is trained, my palate is trained, but you can make educated guesses of what something's going to smell and taste like. Even by looking at it, you know, you go, oh, that's a dark coloured beer, or it's a dark coloured wine. So in your head, you have a sense of what it might smell or taste like. So a masterclass in tasting and smelling, it's all about the smell, by the way. So the brain registers 80% of flavour through the nose. So it's all about smelling, which is why we don't taste our food or drink when we have a cold, because we're not smelling it. Yeah. So it's really, really important. You can actively do that. You swirl your glass around and actively sniff it, or you can inactively do it by just taking a mouthful, and the aromas will go up through your mouth into the bulb of your nose, where there are millions of smell cells. A few seconds later, it hits the brain, and your brain might go, oh, that smells or tastes of coffee or chocolate or blackberries or lemons or whatever, honey. So all these different things, they're flavors, not tastes. Tastes are different. Tastes are sweet, salt, acidic, bitter, sour, umami, which is savory. They're tastes. Yeah. Flavors are different. Flavors come through the nose. So you'll have a masterclass of that. So suddenly that group of people in 5 minutes are going to be experts in, oh, I'm swirling around. Oh, yes, I'm getting, oh, I can smell nuts, or I can smell caramel, or I can smell this. And they taste it. And that is reinforced by tasting and swallowing it. what their nose has told them. So
that's really interesting. I love how you say there's a difference between flavors and tastes, and I don't suppose I'd ever really thought about that before, but you're absolutely, they are two different things, aren't they?
Yeah, in fact, taste is often registered as a texture or a physical feeling. Now, a flavour isn't. We wouldn't go, oh, that honey was quite acidic on my tongue, because we've actually used a taste word there, acidic. Acidity is one of the tastes, sourness.
Yeah.
So you wouldn't ever describe a flavour as a physical feeling on your tongue, whereas tastes tend to be textural.
Yeah.
So it's quite complicated, but it's really fascinating. And what it ends up doing is just that 5 minutes or even less of just knowing that, it changes your life.
Yeah.
And it has with me. You know, everything now that I smell or drink eat or drink, you know, I get the aromatics. I think about the texture. I think about the body of it, the mouthfeel and the whole experience of eating or drinking. Now, that's what's now known as mindfulness. Oh,
it's really the word out of my mouth then, because that's exactly this to me sounds like a mindful process. You know, like you get people to go outside and, you know, listen and see and touch and smell and taste. That's all about mindfulness. So it sounds like that's what you're teaching, isn't it?
Yes. And then because it's a social occasion, I don't just want it to be a teaching scenario, so we have some fun as well. I mean, it is all about having fun. So you've learned the basics, how to taste like a professional, and then we quite often play a tasting game. So I'll give them some tasting clues, and there'll be two clues for each drink. So the guest or the audience has to guess which of those two clues is correct. Now, they've got really good odds. They've got a 50-50 chance of being right. So, but that's fun. And then we have we decide who the winner is at the end, and we give them lots of glory and applause. And it's just really good fun. It is. And it brings people together and relaxes them and gives them a social time, helps to bond people. It's really good for business groups, actually, because if they want to meet new clients, for instance, but it can be quite scary to meet a new client. So if you do it in a social way with this sort of parallel event going on, they haven't got that stress of like, oh gosh, I'm meeting so-and-so now. You know, they'll have a little drink, or they're playing a little game, or they're doing this and that, and just gently and in a friendly way, just socialising and getting to know each other in a social way. So it's really good for business.
And actually, you also get to know the person's personality as well, don't you? I would imagine by the language they're using and their likes and dislikes. And so you're going to connect people that, you know, oh, I really, really like this. So there'll be a group that really like it. And then there might be another group that go, really, it's not for me. So that's fascinating. I just wanted to ask you, you said earlier about choose the best. Now, does the best necessarily have to be the most expensive?
No, definitely not. In fact, I would say that some of the most expensive drinks on the bar in a pub, for instance, or in a bar or a restaurant, are the ones that are made on an industrial scale and made in a way to maximise profits for the producer.
Yeah.
And they're the most expensive ones. So I can think, I won't say any brands at all now, but, you know, I can think of basically industrial versions of alcoholic drinks. The best is what you think the best is, or if I'm curating, for instance, what I would think the best is, or to give people a different experience. So, for instance, you may never have had this type of wine or this cider before, or this style of beer. So I'm going to present that as the best of its class or of its style. So I guess I would be the one who was deciding what the best was. But for a person drinking for themselves, no, it doesn't have to be the most expensive. It has to be, for me, it would be something that's made by a smaller company, made with a sense of, I want to make this beautiful drink because it's really important to me and I'm an artisan, rather than I'm going to make this drink because it's going to make me lots of money.
And that's interesting, is it? Because we're seeing more and more businesses setting, gin, for example, has gone mad at the moment. But you've got so many tiny little organisations that have set up their own artisan beer or cider. And it's really lovely to see those people.
Yes. And as a business person, actually, even if I wasn't a business person, me as a consumer, I would always choose to buy the small company, you know, the small brand owner or the local one, or the one where you know that they're real people and they've got a passion about it. I'd much rather do that than just buy the massive corporate brands and the industrial scale ones. You know, I want something that's special. And I know that the people who've done that, they've put their soul into what they're making, and you can taste that. I firmly believe that in food and drink, you taste the effort and the passion and the soul that's gone into making or producing or rearing the animals or growing the, you know, the vegetables or the crops. So that's what I prefer to do.
I think that's a really, really good point. You can taste that passion. You can taste the passion in the food and the drink. Absolutely.
Yeah. And so I'm sorry, go ahead.
All right. The last couple of years for you, I guess, as for almost everybody on the planet, have been challenging. And you know, how have you been able to do what you do? Because there's, you know, there's been less and less face to face. I mean, obviously we're coming out of it now. So how's it been for you?
It's been really tricky, actually. I started my business during the credit crunch in 2008. And my friends were saying, it's a bad time to open a business. I said, no, I think it's a really good time, because I'm in the alcohol and hospitality and social business. And companies always want that type of activity or social occasion. And then the pandemic came along, and my business model depended on being in person with big groups for corporate events or training hospitality staff. So thank goodness for video conferencing. Because without it, I don't know what I would have done, actually. So I have pivoted. I do some corporate events online. I've been doing some training online as well, using video conferencing. And what I also did, I developed an e-learning platform where you can download courses that have already been written and recorded. So you can download courses in beer, cider and wine knowledge. And they're aimed at anybody who wants to expand their knowledge of beer, wine on cider, really well priced. And great foundational knowledge that will give you, in a short space of time, a really good grounding in beer, cider or wine. So I did that. And for that, I've won two big awards, or I've been nominated for two big awards recently. So I was included in the top 100 SMEs in London and the Southeast by NatWest and NewsQuest, you know, the media group. And then I'm a finalist for the Great British Entrepreneur Awards for pivoting, in the pivoting category. And that was for changing the way I run my business, basically. And then this e-learning platform. So that's what I've been doing. And it's lovely to be recognised, because we all work so hard. And during the pandemic, we're there on our own thinking, do we have a future for our businesses? And so it's wonderful to have been recognised and to be seen. And to be validated for what you've been doing.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And am I right, Jane, in thinking that you used to be up in London, but you now live in Brighton and Hove?
You're right. So I was in London till about 6 years ago. I moved down to Brighton six years ago, and a lot of my clients are in London. So I still thought of myself as sort of a London business, but I'm a Brighton business because I'm in Kemp Town in Brighton. So I'm now member of the Brighton Chamber of Commerce. I mean, doing lots of networking in Brighton. So I'm a Brighton business who just happens to have clients in London as well, or actually all over the place and, you know, all over the country, but mostly Brighton and London.
That's fantastic. So if people wanted to get hold of you, perhaps they, you know, they're starting to look at corporate events, networking events and things like that, where's the best place to get hold of you, Jane?
Well, I have a website called School of Booze. So it's just put it in a search engine. It will come up immediately. There isn't another business called that, by the way. So it does come up as the first result, thankfully. And then just send me an email or call me, and I'd be very happy to speak or email people.
Yeah, we'll put all of your details on our social media channels as well, so everybody can get in touch with you. And are there any events or anything coming up for you in the next few months with Christmas coming up? Have you got any plans?
People haven't been booking Christmas yet, but if they do, I think think it might still be online. I have a feeling. I have a big client who's an events producer, and so they hire me to do things for their clients. And they've been telling me what their big corporate clients are up to, and it seems to be still quite a lot of online. So I don't do things for the general public usually, but so I don't have anything that people can come along to, but they can certainly get in touch with me and I can set an event up either in person or online. So if people were interested, you know, I can do it. We can set something up.
Sounds like a fantastic idea for you know, some Brighton businesses in the next couple of months. Do something, get Jane involved in it. Well, it's been really lovely to speak to you. Thank you so much for coming on to the Brighton Business Show on Radio Reverb. I shall look forward to seeing you again very soon, Jane.
Can't wait to see you at a lovely networking event with the British Chamber. I said British Chamber, the Brighton Chamber of Commerce. And thank you for inviting me on. It's been great to speak to you. Thank you.
Fabulous. Thank you, Jane. This is Lisa Moore for the Brighton Business Show on Radio Reverb, 97.2 FM, available on DAB Digital Radio to download as a podcast or listen again online. And our show is run in partnership with the Friday Ad and the Friday Media Group, promoting, supporting and inspiring local business. Hey, hey, hey. So, Helen, we haven't chatted yet today, but obviously this show this month is all about events. How are you, by the way? Are you well?
I'm very well, thank you, Lisa. I'm looking forward to seeing you in real life tomorrow, which is amazing.
Talking about events, we're going to a wedding reception, aren't we, tomorrow?
We are going to an event. But yes, this show, obviously a subject close to our hearts in terms of events.
Yes, and our next guest when we come on to her is also very involved in events in many ways, which it's going to be a really interesting interview. But, you know, you and I met, Helen, pretty much through events, didn't we? So
we did.
Spuriously through Inspiring Talks Brighton, before I took over the running of the event, I came and saw you on stage. Talking there, which was amazing, and then got to know each other because you were running a couple of events in Brighton.
Yeah,
fire up, is that right?
I spoke at Inspiring Talks. I remember being incredibly nervous when giving that talk because it was one of the first ones I'd given after my re-emergence. But yes, then after that, I guess my confidence took off, and I decided to run my own conference. And I decided to call it Entrepreneurial Leaders Live. I mean, that's a tongue twister, isn't it? Yeah. I don't think I'd ever call something like that again. But really wanted to kind of bring people together in an inspiring way, as well as learning things. It was a huge learning curve for me to put on that first conference. It was a 2-day one, and the amount of money it cost and all of those sorts of things. Definitely lots of lessons learned there. And then the second one, obviously, I'd learned a lot of lessons. But in the meantime, I was also approached to do another event, which was called Fire Up. And that was a seminar in London that I put together with five other business owners. And that was a firewalking event. So it was five sort of motivational business focused talks and then a firewalk at the end. And that was also an incredible learning experience. But it was a great event.
It was a great event, and it was a great venue. And I remember doing the firewalk and sort of sitting. I was sitting quite close to the window at the time, and I was watching the guys build this bonfire outside, thinking, "Oh my God, no, we cannot be walking on that. Surely we cannot be walking on that." And it was amazing. It was an incredible, incredible experience. Really good fun.
It was, and I look back and I think, gosh, because that was 2019 before the world kind of changed, and I think, God, that was such an incredible thing to be part of, and I'm very grateful that I was part of that. And obviously I had big plans for 2020 in terms of events, and that kind of all changed, and it has changed my view on running events, but yeah. I am definitely going to be doing more in the future. What about you, because I know that you're involved in lots of different types of events, particularly your networking, aren't you?
Well, yeah, and it's interesting because obviously with the Athena network, we took everything online, and actually as a business we've decided to keep the formal part of our networking online, and then the informal part we are having face to face. And it's interesting talking to my members. Some of them are very, very, very keen to get back to face to face. But then when there is a face to face event, they don't all come.
Mm.
And I think one of the benefits of doing things using technology and Zoom is the amount of time that it saves. And especially in the female networking world, if they've got families to look after or they're working from home, you know, spending half an hour or even an hour in the car to get somewhere, having that back can really help.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I think the disadvantage of doing everything on Zoom is you don't connect so well with people.
No.
And I was at something called the Brilliant Breakfast this morning.
Actually. Yes. How was that?
It was fabulous. It was a charity event to raise money for the Prince's Trust and specifically women supporting women. And it was really lovely to have some conversations with female founders and find out what they're doing and talk about who inspires us and everything. But what was so interesting is that people were walking into the room and you think, I know your face. Have I seen it on a screen? Have I seen it on social media? Because we haven't done that whole face-to-face thing. So
yeah,
really interesting. And I think the funniest thing is how everybody says, gosh, I didn't realise how tall you were.
Well, you are tall, Lisa.
Yes. So that's been fun. And I have really recently been debating about setting up Inspiring Talks Brighton.
Yes.
Again, but perhaps in a different format, maybe not a sort of regular monthly thing, but maybe a quarterly thing or maybe aligned to an event or charity or
yeah.
Something.
Yeah, I hear you. I'm the same. Like I had all these plans in 2020. I was going to launch a different type of event. It was very niche focused in terms of speaking and verbal communication. And now I'm thinking, you know, how could that look different? I really want to do an in-person thing, but I want it to feel different. And, you know, when you kind of just can't land, if you're not landing on something, then you've just got to kind of go with that, haven't you? Like there's other things, you know, in terms of like collaborations and stuff like that, but I'm actually taking part in some virtual events, as in, you know, the virtual expos and the virtual conferences and the virtual summits. I'm speaking at those, that's always great. But there's still nothing like standing up, which you will be doing tomorrow, in front of people.
Yes.
And actually speaking, you know, there's still nothing quite like that.
No. And actually, yeah, tomorrow, it is quite funny. I'm going to be speaking in front of Battle Abbey. Literally on the lawn in front of Battle Abbey, and it's all really to raise the profile of Battle Speakers, which is part of Toastmasters, because a lot of Toastmasters clubs, they're all about public speaking. They're all about getting up on stage and feeling that horrible feeling in your tummy, and doing it online is definitely different. And so a lot of the clubs have struggled with membership dropping off, and so they decided that they wanted to run a Toastmasters meeting in Battle in front of the general public so they can see how it works.
I think that's a brilliant idea. You know, I think that regardless, you know, I think that more of the Toastmasters meetings should be run like that, because that's where you're really getting a sense of authenticity, aren't you? Of actually doing it for real. And I understand, you know, no matter what, practicing standing up in front of people is always going to be beneficial. But there's that sort of certain rawness to doing something like that, which make it sort of almost forces you to kind of just be more natural rather than sort of really polished and not wooden. But, you know, do you know what I mean? You can lean more towards feeling wooden in your delivery if it's a kind of, you know, enclosed environment.
Yeah. And I think it's funny because I'm actually going to give a speech that I gave a couple of days ago, which is lessons of a life coach, really. And my it's not my experiences, so I'm not sharing client information or anything like that. It's more about what have I learnt as a life coach that has taught me something as well. You know, so for example, the phrase listen to understand rather than listen to reply is one of the things I talk about, and it's just as true in life and in particularly in relationships, is when you're having a conversation, you're listening, waiting to be able to give your response to it. When you're in a coaching relationship or coaching environment, actually what you want to do is to allow that person to really be heard.
Yes, absolutely.
You listen to understand.
Yes.
That's quite a hard skill.
Oh, you know what? You know, I've been a coach since I was 18. And when I started my coaching career at Virgin, I was 18. That's been one of the hardest lessons to learn. Mm-hmm. And it's still a work in progress sometimes, you know, but absolutely, that's a fantastic lesson. And very inspiring as well. You know, I would love to hear that talk. It's just reminding me, so I'm coaching the TEDx speakers at the moment, because we've got our TEDx event happening in January. And so they're starting to send their talks through. So obviously that's another event I'm involved in terms of the curation of that. And it's just so inspiring hearing these people talk and the messages and the stories that they have, and the fact that they're just grassroots people. You know, they're not professional speakers. They're real people with real stories and messages, and very, very moving. So yeah, kind of from what you've just said there, and from that, it just reminds me why I do what I do, really.
Yeah, and you always say that for you it's the story, and certainly going to hear Heather's story in a minute. It's the story behind the person that is that's the inspiration, isn't it? And I know you've been working really hard, and you've launched a new product and program that you've put together. So go on, tell me a bit more, because I am following you and I'm getting involved and I'm watching the training.
Yeah. So I, after, you know, working with my clients for quite a few years on these particular subjects that I've kind of niched down into communication, but looking at it from a holistic point of view as a business owner, because I help people with speaking, public speaking, but it's not just about public speaking when you run your own business. That's one element of running your own business. So from working with the clients, I started to sort of see a pattern forming, and it came under these three areas, which was the authority, you know, getting recognized as an expert in what you do, and a thought leader, and someone who's credible. And, you know, because there's so many coaches and consultants out there who've just read a book or done a 12-week certification and then call themselves a coach, you know. And so I really want to showcase people who have experience and have authority in what they do. Then there's impact with AIR, authority, impact, and reach. Impact is all around how you communicate, how you are structuring your communication, whether you're doing a Facebook Live or a webinar or a workshop or a keynote talk, how confidence that you have, eradicating all your mindset blocks, the presence that you have, and how you're telling stories and using structure. And then reach is how you're getting in front of people in the right way that doesn't feel pushy, how you're pitching for talks, how you're increasing your following, all of those things. So I created an assessment, a free assessment, that you can take, and you score yourself, and then you plot yourself on a map and you see where you are in each area, and then you've got an action plan that gives you advice on how to move forward. So that's
It's fantastic. And I've done the assessment because I thought, have a look at this. And I've got my little map, and now I need to create my plan. And actually standing in front of Battle Abbey is probably part of that plan, I think.
It absolutely is, Lisa.
It's getting back out there, and I know for me, I definitely have lost a little bit of confidence over the last couple of years.
We all have, you know. Mm. So getting back out there again, doing it a little bit scared, gets you right back in the zone.
Absolutely, it does. Well, best of luck, Helen. It's really fantastic, and I think it's time to introduce Heather to understand a little bit more about her business and what she does, and the plethora. And it's a shame it's radio, because I can see Heather's behind the scenes picture here, and she's got, I think, 40 odd hats behind.
I think I'm up to about 48 now, if you know, all of them. They're not all on display. I've had to make my own hat racks, because nobody you buy one and there's like three hooks and they're about 3 centimeters apart. It's like no. So, and actually, well, you're hearing my story, but actually they're actually made, and they use latte spoons because I have a coffee business, and they just sit very beautifully. That doesn't damage the hats. So it is, and it's one of the things I've missed most in lockdown. So
this is Lisa Moore and Helen Packham on the Brighton Business Show for Radio Reverb on 97.2 FM, available to download as a podcast on the website. Anyway, Heather, apart from your hats, I know that you are a very interesting lady, and there's two sides of your business. There's the coffee side, and then there's the Networking Links Cafe. So tell us a little bit more about where you've come from. Just give us your story, because it's a
very quick potted history, because it's a long old one, but it basically started with, I went to university and became an accountant. Nobody has ever met me. It's about the worst, job for me ever, because it's just not me. But it did give me a really good kind of basis for whatever it was that I wanted, which is kind of why I chose it. I was fairly good at it and fairly good at maths, etc. So I did it, but it's given me a great grounding. So I've worked in some very interesting places. I think that's part of the story. So I can work in different places. And I've got a lot of knowledge about a lot of things, because I've worked in interesting creative places doing a not very interesting job. But it's a really good basis for all the things I do. But I did kind of slightly lose the will about 20 years ago. And I ended up setting up a mobile coffee bar outside Arundel train station, which I did for 10 years. And in fact, a couple of days ago was the 4 years since I've left. I can't believe. But I literally 4:30 in the morning, every morning, selling coffee. It was brilliant. And it was that whole... And it was people, it was business, it was communicating, it was food, it was all my happy things. The cold kind of was irrelevant, and the lack of sleep was sort of irrelevant, because it was, just what you're saying just now, Helen, about that, the why and the why we do these things. It just made me happy, and it made other people happy. And I'm like, if that's what you do in the world, that's great. And then I bought my coffee supplier, so the coffee roast became my own. So I have my own coffee roast, Harry's Coffee. It's got a hat on it, of course, on the logo. So I've sold that for 10 something more years. I can't remember now. I've lost it. And I love doing that, but for me, it's not quite enough. But what was really interesting was that the marketing of coffee machines and all that, probably in the 6 months before lockdown, I finally kind of worked out what it was about me and coffee and all of this, was that whole thing of facilitating conversation and connection and sit down, talk to each other, be creative, do these lovely things over great coffee in your office together. And then the 23rd of March bloody hit, and that was like, oh dear. And immediate, I mean, literally every single one of my bar two, because I have a couple of farm shops that I supply, but all of my clients closed, the whole lot. So that was like, oops.
Wow. What did you do then?
What did you do then? And also on the other side of that, I still have mobile coffee bar, like I had at the train station, do big events, hence the events nature of things. I do big food festivals and so on. The whole lot got cancelled. So it was literally, I have no income overnight. So a couple of things. Main thing on the coffee side, started supplying to people at home. If you've got a meeting, send somebody some lovely coffee, because you still want to engage and chat. So do that. I'm quite into the whole thing of fika, which is a Swedish word for coffee and cake and conversation. So I'm a big fan of fika. So it's like, yeah, have fika with a friend, a client, a new prospect. And that kept me going. Just get, broke even. But that's fine. It kept me in business for the year, which was brilliant. So that was really lovely. But then I sort of thought, actually, this is an opportunity, in a really out of such horrible adversity and everything else. And I don't take away from that at all. It's been grim. However, I literally contacted a friend of mine and said, that idea we had a year ago, because most of my conversations start with, I've had a great idea. And I just said to him, that thing we were talking about, let's do that. And so we started chatting about that. But I said, but in the meantime, you're in Yorkshire, I'm in Sussex. Let's do some networking. I do lots of it. It's like, this is an opportunity to meet new people. Lots of people were doing networking. Let's do something. So we kind of went, okay, Eventbrite, charge a fiver. You invite 40 people. I'll invite 40 people. 39 people came, gave us money. Most of it went to the VAT man and the Eventbrite, but hey. And it was like, right, okay, should we do that again? And we did. But for me, the really important thing, and I think this is sort of all anything that we go to and we engage with, is I want to learn something. I don't want to spend 2 hours of my life looking at 40 people who are all kind of going, here's my by rote, you know, elevated pitch.
Yeah.
With no passion, nothing to differentiate. And I've learned nothing. And I can't actually remember past person three what anybody does.
Yeah.
So that's kind of evolved. So we created, changed names and did a few things, but we created my Business Links Cafe. And the cafe thing, obviously my coffee thing.
Yes.
But the cafes of the 17th and 18th century, where you kind of, that's where obviously all men, thank God the world has moved on, but that's where commerce was done and conversation was had. So it kind of fits in with all the kind of things. So all the kind of strands, I know some people kind of go, I do some quite different things. But actually, they all kind of pull together, and it's all this connection. I call it connection alchemy, or building relational capital, which is all about what we do, because all of our businesses are totally dependent on these connections that we make and the people we know and the things we learn.
There's a great TED talk around where great ideas come from, and talking about the liquid network.
I love the network.
And how that was such a, you know, sprung forward in terms of innovation and creativity and invention when these cafes were created, because of this liquid network and how people were able to create ideas together, because the sort of saying is that no idea is really new, and that actually are formed from different ideas that come together from different people. So that's a very good TED talk, just throwing that one out there
for people. And I've written it down.
Helen, is the TEDx that you're running in January, or you're involved in it, it's called Spill the Tea?
It's called Spill the Tea. So it's all about that. The theme is very much about secrets of the soul, sharing gossip and thoughts and ideas through, you know, those types of situations. So that's what
it's what we do. It's just you meet somebody, it's just, okay, obviously we can do it again now, thank goodness. It's like, let's go and have a coffee. Whether you drink coffee or not is irrelevant. It's just become a figure of speech, because it is how we connect and do business. And other things have just evolved, and sort of, you know, I know we're sort of doing eventy type stuff, but I'm now a master of ceremony, an online master of ceremonies. I host Zoom rooms for other people's events, because apparently I have a knack of keeping people entertained. Don't know why. I have an appropriate hat, of course, for every occasion.
Okay, so extra ceremonies for any type of... So when you say ceremonies, it's any type of event.
Yes. So some people think master of ceremonies, it's the kind of the wedding type thing. I'm more a kind of a facilitator. So I would facilitate panel discussions. I've done stuff over at Portsmouth Uni. I'm entrepreneur in residence over there. So I've done various things like that, and host stuff for young entrepreneurs to kind of encourage them. I did a networking event this morning, and I host the Zoom room and basically keep the rabble vaguely in check. And again, it comes back to the thing of that facilitating connections. And the meeting was hybrid, so a bunch of people in the room, a bunch of us in Zoom, and but it was lovely, and we the tech is fantastic. We can interact with each other. It's absolutely brilliant. So I think this is, you know, I love the fact it's brilliant to be back in touch with people. Giving somebody a hug. I went to my first in-person networking the other day. It was absolutely bloody brilliant. It was wonderful. And I went to an exhibition and it was brilliant. But the fact that I can actually have a meeting with somebody in Sweden at 9 o'clock in the morning, in Swansea this afternoon, and somewhere else this evening, as important. And I think we have to embrace that. And I think one of the challenges that we're going to have is around charging. I put a little post on LinkedIn the other day just to ask a question. Wow. It was a poll. It was a bit controversial.
It was about
how we charge for things. If it would normally be free, would you consider charging for it on Zoom or online, because of the tech involved and the person doesn't have to go anywhere? So it's the opportunity cost of just sitting in your dining room. I've not had to go to London, do all of those things. And it was a very innocent little question. 5,500 people looked at it, 150 comments and votes. Ooh, can of worms. It's obviously something we need to bring to the fore and discuss how we do it, because because your intellectual property is just as valid whether I deliver it on Zoom or I'm standing on a stage.
Exactly. And I think there were a lot of people when the whole pandemic hit. Well, actually, in my world, the fitness world. So I took my fitness studio online and I continued to charge the same as I was charging were they coming face to face. Because in my eyes, my knowledge, experience, capabilities were still there. I was still delivering exactly the same thing. OK, they didn't come to a studio with lovely mirrors and things like that, but it was exactly the same service. But there were a lot of fitness instructors out there that either went completely free, and they were doing even more. So rather than, you know, perhaps they used to do two classes a week, suddenly we're doing it every day or three times a day. Or there were people that had halved their prices. So in a matter of days, they'd halved their turnover.
Yeah, I think it's better to add value. If you're going to charge the same, and perhaps, yes, perhaps your cost base does come down, you know, great. But then just add some extra value. Don't diminish, as you say, this doesn't change.
Yeah, it's very interesting, isn't it? And so was there a sort of general feeling when you did this poll, or was it all over the place with everyone?
It was all over the place. Some of it was if they're charging in the room and there's specific learning going on. I had asked in the context of going to an exhibition. That was how I had framed the question, but everybody went off on their own interpretation of my question. So they kind of taught their own thing. So it was very, very mixed. And I think I think for like with everything with pricing is always a sensitive thing. And it's like, if I can put this on, but demonstrate extra value or this, or find a way, there's a model, right, we'll do that bit for free. But if you want the recordings and you want to come to the Q&As or the whatever it is, well, then I'm going to charge you for that. But actually the recording, that's for free. And then that becomes part of your marketing. So we actually put on a summit, a monthly summit. Yeah. And to begin with, we used to charge for that. It was free for members, but we charged for it as our cafe offer has expanded, because we do lots more now. And it's brilliant. We literally put on three events pretty much a week now, which is kind of fun. But we sort of got to the point when people are sort of starting to come back out again, we've realized that actually that model doesn't really work. We've had to evolve it again into something slightly different, with a different way that we charge for it. And it's become much more part of our marketing rather than this is a charged for event. Much more effective. We get many more of the right sort of people in the room, and it will lead to them, to then people being, to coming in to do things that then have an ongoing income stream rather than charge for the one-off that people will be like, well, I don't necessarily want to pay. Actually, they come, they see the real value that we offer. So then they're very happy to join in other things. So it's lots of rethinking and reworking at the moment.
And I think there is going to be lots of rethinking. And I'm very much, even at today's meeting that I was at this morning, I got a very big sense that people are trying to figure out what they want, what they like, what they don't like, how it's going to fit in, how is this all going to evolve? And I think that's where we are, isn't it? This is an evolutionary period for the human race. Actually, let's face it, this is a global thing. It's not just Brighton and Hove and us in the States. The whole planet, the whole business world, corporate world is evolving into something that it's not experienced before, which in some ways you could say it's quite an exciting time to be alive. If we put the
positive
spin on it, you know, this is fantastic. We've got a great opportunity to do things better.
So it doesn't diminish any of the horror that has led us to this point and the ongoing thing that we need to make it better. But as you say, it's an opportunity for the human race to just be a nicer bunch of, you know, human people in all the things that we do, and how can we make things more inclusive and accessible and all of these things, because the tech is there and the tech is moving on like daily. There's another clever thing that can enable us to do things better. I mean, we can't quite, you know, reach out and, you know, give you a cup of coffee. There we go. That's my morning brew.
Yeah, so actually that's interesting, because I haven't been to a hybrid event. So I've gone back to just plain old face-to-face or still on Zoom. So how did it work?
So what we did, so this particular event, it used to be the Juice Breakfast, the Juice FM Breakfast in Brighton. And it has now evolved and has become the BBBC, the Big Brighton Breakfast. And we took it online. And I, right from the beginning, I hosted the Zoom rooms. That was my role, to kind of be the host with the other guys who were doing the presentation stuff. So that was fine. And then we were the first organization literally in the area to do a hybrid event. That was specifically, this is a networking event. So we've got a local business who specializes in AV stuff. And the first one, yeah, there were some teething things. I think we were about 15 minutes late, the first one where we sort of divided up with the room. But yeah, this morning we had half the room with they were either Malmaison Hotel de Vin having their breakfast, and the other half of us were in Zoom, and it just worked. But I think it is important to have somebody who gets the tech.
I can
manage it, but please, in terms of the front facing stuff, but don't ask me to do the behind the scenes. It's not going to happen. It's like, yeah, I can drive my car, but don't ask me to fix it. I know it's petrol in, but that's my lot.
That is going to be the challenge. It was one of the challenges I faced in the pandemic, was because I had a big following of sort of older ladies, you know, 60s, 70s, 80s, who just didn't understand Zoom and you know, Teams and all those things, and how to do it. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with the technology, because I think if you embrace technology and you have that mindset that, okay, I'm gonna get this, you'll be fine. I wonder how many people will not embrace it, and what's going to happen to them.
Yeah, and I mean, and I think for all of us as well, we are over Zoomed. I mean, let's face it, enough already, and everything else that we do. And honestly, it sort of came back in dribs and drabs, but getting out and doing events with people, actually making coffee for people, was managed a couple when in little half unleashing us into the world last year. Managed a couple, but as I say, a lot, and then just I've managed bits and pieces over the year, probably about a third of what I would normally do. But it was just fantastic. And I think that we still want to do that. We know even more so how much more important that is. But I think if the hybrid world, and I mean, I think people kind of going, oh, you know, well, everybody's going to work from home now. So it's like, no, mm-hmm. We're social beings. We need to interact. We have to interact with each other. No matter how fantastic this is, and it's lovely to see you, and I've met some amazing friends some incredible people I've met in the last 18 months, who I would never in a million years would I have met these people ever, and yet they've become just phenomenal friends, you know. Or the people that we have met, so like I met my friend Claire in Sweden last year, through circumstance we're accountability buddies, and we speak to each other every Monday morning 9 o'clock for an hour without fail.
It's fabulous, isn't it? And you know, people sometimes think, oh, you can't make relationships on Zoom, on social network, on your social media, but it's only the same version of a pen pal. You know, my daughter met a girl on holiday when she was six, and they have not seen each other since. Yeah. But they started off writing postcards to each other, then they wrote letters, and then Snapchat came along and they went, oh, they talk all the time now, and they're already talking about, you know, meeting up when they both pass their driving tests and that sort of thing. But that's been 11 years.
Yeah, but that's the thing, is like there's some friends where it doesn't matter. I haven't seen for various circumstances, lost touch with a friend of mine. We lost touch for about 28 years. Actually, no, beg your pardon. That was 20 years, but we saw each other about 3 months ago in a very random way that we kind of reconnected, and literally walked into his house, big hug, kiss, hello, and we carried on chatting as if it had been
if it was yesterday, you know,
not 20 years ago. And I think there's some friendships that just support. So in a way, it doesn't matter how they start, if it works, it works. And yeah, it's brilliant. So
what So where do you see, in your own personal opinion, where do you see events and networking and conferences and seminars and things like that, where do you think they're going to be in 12 months?
Yeah, I think a lot of the events that I go to are foodie related. So it's kind of, I lunch, the Contemporary Food to Go show, one of my favourites. It's in October. They've just had it. I missed it. But you can't go to a foodie exhibition of people showing their new things online. Somebody talked to you about the most amazing fudge that's ever been made, but if I can't sit there and nibble it like a mouse, it's
our previous guest, Jane, runs the School of Booze, and she was saying exactly that. You can't really sort of talk to people about the smell of wine unless it's actually there physically in front of you. Yeah.
So I think, and lots of people got very innovative who do food and drink. I did some stuff, but you have to send out this and do tastings, and you can get clever. I don't think that was necessarily sustainable because it's a very expensive way to do things. But to be honest, if you think about how much it costs you to have an exhibition stand at one of these fancy places in London, you could send out quite a few samples for that price. So I think there is going to be a big thing. I've been working with a client actually, because we're doing the coffee for them, is that they are actually, that we've created, I've put them in touch with some techie people I know. As you know, I know everybody. So we've got this amazing, and he has created a virtual, and I mean full on, incredible virtual exhibition hall for them. Mm. It's construction based, so it doesn't, you don't have to be able to feel that, you're not going to get a caterpillar digger in the room anyway, are you? Here's a picture. So literally you can walk through this exhibition hall and chat, because the tech is so advanced, and they've been doing this for several years, so this is not pandemic related, that you can go into this exhibition hall and literally, but then they can, as opposed to the complete and awful environmental waste of an exhibition, which is truly dreadful. I think a lot of them, they really need to up, a lot of people need to up their game, because stuff is just used and then destroyed. You can literally recreate that in environment next year, a couple of new people. And it's, so I think it's going to get us to be really innovative, which for me, that's really exciting. And, even our business that I run with Richard, we are constantly innovating. We are all over the country. We can't, some of us have managed to get together in person, but which is lovely, and you take a little video and a thing and you share that. But we've now found an online space where we can meet, and anybody can open up a room, and we can literally meet online as if we were walking into a cafe. So we are having to constantly innovate, and I think that's where we're going. We're having to find interesting and exciting new ways. I think it's about the money side of things, how we charge for these things. The environmental, for me, as you know, I do Green Party stuff. So for me, the environmental impact, here's a chance to make a really important contribution to, the positive side of things. Let's make this world a better place for all those good reasons.
That actually is a really positive message, isn't it? The environmental side. And it's probably, if I'm honest, it's probably not one I'd really thought about. But yes, you're absolutely right. Those seminars, conferences.
Oh, people flying in from around the world and all the rest of it. And we're all having here, and our guest speaker from New York does not need to get on a plane. Yeah. They really don't need to get on a plane.
No.
There is a slight difference, but if they're an awesome speaker, they're an awesome speaker.
Exactly. And they will inspire. So Heather, if people wanted to get in touch with you to find out about either the Business Links Cafe, or they just fancy some of your delicious coffee.
So I hang out a lot in LinkedIn land. So if you just put in Heather Barry, and that's Barrie, and you'll find me, it's Heather Barry one, I think is my LinkedIn name, but there's me, and I've got a hat on, of course. So that's LinkedIn land. And then the cafe is, we are My Business Links, and it's LINCS, mybusinesslinks.cafe. You'll find us there.
Fantastic. It's been so lovely having you on here. Thank you so much, Heather.